Something you may or may not know about Christian Science is that the discoverer of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, made a startling claim in the mid-1800s. Matter, or physical substance, isn't what it seems to be. In fact, Mrs. Eddy said it doesn't exist at all. Welcome to Sentinel Watch. I'm Jenny Sawyer. Today I've got my good friend Ethel Baker in the studio with me to talk about this subject because, despite the fact that Mrs. Eddy actually proved her assertion, it's still a hard one to wrap your head around. Ethel is a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Ethel. Welcome to the studio.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
We are going to be talking today about the subject of matter. And I think that this can be kind of a dicey one, so it'll be fun to explore together. I wonder if, just right off the bat, you can help listeners get a little bit of a sense of what makes the concept of matter from a Christian Science perspective so unique.
Well, I think maybe it'd be helpful to start with what people just generally think of as matter.
Sure.
Which is the stuff around us, which is our bodies, which is whatever you can think about and touch, see, hear, the five physical senses take cognizance of. Christian Science starts really with God as the decider of what's actual and real, not the physical senses. So in that regard, it's really starting with God good as the nature of reality for all time. And so it's starting with what God knows, what God has created to be as true substance. And it's not made up of what we call matter, and we can get into the particulars about that in a little bit, but it's what God has caused it to be, which is like him. Man is made in God's image and likeness, Genesis says in the Bible. And Jesus, Christian Scientists consider him our way shower, to show us the way, to provide not only the explanations, but the evidence of this very different way of seeing the world and seeing ourselves and seeing our bodies and the consequent outcomes of knowing that, being aware of that.
I'm glad you started us off with Jesus, because I think sometimes when we talk about something like matter, it feels like, well, we got to sort of fast forward to modern times when science is talking about this. But Jesus really disproved everything that we've come to think is perhaps true from a lowercase science perspective. He walked on the water. That's not supposed to be possible. People who had shortened or deformed limbs, those limbs were just made whole in a moment. Yeah. What was going on?
Well, and not to mention people being raised from death. One person, even 4 days, had been dead. He was showing us the way that things really are. So he's, to us, he's our exemplar. He is our example in thought, word, deed. And pursuing that, Mary Baker Eddy, who discovered and founded Christian Science, let him be her way shower in terms of not just a moral life, but in understanding life with a capital L.
And meaning God.
Meaning God. I mean, that is what she ultimately concluded was God. But it's really, I think, very significant that she was on a search really her whole life to understand God, really to understand existence. And she was Christian, and so she quite naturally pursued the Bible, and especially the New Testament and Jesus' teachings and the healings that were accomplished. She had tried virtually everything to be well and was ill from an early age and for a long time. So you could say she used her life, even her body, as the testing ground for what she felt she was understanding about what Jesus taught, which to her and to Christian Scientists, and I would think in a way to all Christians, is timeless. It's not categorized or sandwiched into a particular historic period.
So connecting now Jesus' example and then what Mary Baker Eddy discovered with Christian Science, what she called really a revelation, and that she was able to put into practice and see, oh, this isn't just a nice theoretical, theological concept. This is how things really are. This is an explanation of reality as it truly is.
Which is science.
Which is science.
Where the science comes from.
Yeah. And so help listeners connect the dots then in terms of what did she see about matter? How did she define it?
Well, she defined it as the opposite of spirit. And she defined substance as God, as spirit, which to the physical senses seems invisible.
Yeah.
But very consequential because we're alive. We're walking around. We're, you know, we speak, we move, and we have experiences. And many believe that that's because we have a physical body. But really, all of that is driven by thought, by consciousness. That's really the originator of those expressions, of those activities. It's the effect of spirit. And to her, health was anchored in that very serious and important consequence of realizing that God, spirit, is actually all, not just an ultimate thing or something off in the future, but this is the reality of things. This is how things really are, that God is the maker, the one and only power, the only creator, and that all that really is comes from God and so is spiritual. Now, that begs the question, well, what about the world we see and can touch? What it negates is that which is the opposite of good, sin, disease, death, and the appearance of those things and even the experience of those things. Why? Because they're simply not good.
Mm-hmm.
And God is 100% good. And that which he has created is also good and immortal and spiritual. So through this understanding and the life that goes with it, the more moral life that goes with it, goodness in every regard, spiritual and spiritually minded in every regard, and achieved incrementally over time, that doesn't eliminate the world we live in. That helps and heals the world we live in, including our bodies.
Well, and you could also say brings us into the correct idea of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because one of the words that I have encountered reading Science and Health in relation to matter that Mary Baker Eddy used is belief, which I think is, I mean, we don't think of something that seems, you know, like this table we're sitting at. It's like, well, okay, wait, are you saying that this is actually moving us toward a sense of these things being thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of where we're going with this.
It is, and it's not today. It's not nearly as crazy an idea as it was back then.
Yeah.
A number of decades ago, I was really noodling over this a lot because it was troubling me.
Yeah.
You know, I was studying Christian Science, and this part of it was really flummoxing me. And
just because it seems so counterintuitive?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like I'm kind of living in two worlds. I got to take care of my body. I got to do this and that. And I see these things out there. I go shopping in a shopping mall. I buy stuff. What is this stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I remembered actually a couple of things, but one that was pivotal at that time, and I really feel it was a result of prayer, was thinking back to something we did in biology class in 10th grade, which was we took the body apart, as it were, as to what it was composed of.
Oh, okay.
And so you started with the frame and all of that, and then you went down to bones and sinews and tissue, and then that was made up of what? That was made up of cells. And that then was made up of what? Those were made up of molecules. And each of these being a more primary component of the thing ahead of it. So then the molecules are made up of atoms. And this is what was going on in the sciences in general at this time. So because it go back a little ways, we got to molecules, and we got to molecules being made up of atoms. Then we got atoms made up of subatomic particles. And then about this time, quarks were coming into place, which is sort of like saying subatomic particles, because they were running out of vocabulary. And then there was energy. And from there, it has been posited by some scientists anyway that it's thought, or it's consciousness, or it's largely mental. This isn't the case for all physical scientists or medical professionals, but there is certainly a correlation in terms of relating consciousness as being part of the picture of health and the necessity for adjusting thought to have physical outcomes that are positive. Scientists or medical professionals, both of them have been looking in that way for a time now. It isn't to say it's correlatable really with Christian Science per se, or what Mary Baker Eddy herself posited, because she started with God. But they were trying to get, the scientists have for a long time been trying to get down to the essence of this so-called substance called matter. What's it made up of? Well, Mary Baker Eddy just kind of leapfrogged that and said, it's consciousness, it's thought. And she posited a name for that, which was mortal mind. It was nothing but thought. And, you know, in Jesus' explanations and certainly in his demonstrations, he was always talking to consciousness. Even if he seemed to address the body, you might say he was certainly addressing the problems or the need bodily, but he was talking to the person. And he was speaking to consciousness, that that is what needed to change for the body to reflect, as Mary Baker Eddy says, what governs it. And what governs it in not most instances or some instances, but to her, it was every instance. It is always thought that you're dealing with.
Let's now take that to a really practical place. You've had many healings over the course of your life. Can you share one to help listeners understand how the rubber meets the road?
Yeah. One happened quite a number of years ago. It was the summer, and I was working on dealing with a new porch that I had with a housemate I had at the time. And it was new wood, and she was away for the weekend. And I thought, well, I need to put some preservative on this floor. It was a beautiful sunny day. I was alone at the house, and my neighbor had recommended this particular product, and he was a builder, and I figured, okay, he knows what he's talking about. So I didn't really read the label on the material.
So much for that fine print.
Yes.
Huh?
So anyway, it was just a matter of slathering this on to the wood and letting it dry. But I had been thinking at the time there was, like today, conflict in the Middle East. And I just thought, it's kind of a waste of time to just be mindlessly putting this stuff on the floor. I just want to be thinking and praying about something. So I thought, I'll pray about that. And I just took this one sentence from Science and Health where it says, nothing inharmonious can enter being, for life is God. And it struck me that it says being there, not, you know, a body or a person, but being. I mean, it took me a while to kind of even get my mind around that. So I honestly, that was just absorbing me as I'm doing this physical work. And I got to the very end of the project, and there was one piece of wood that had kind of separated in the middle, and there was a point of it that was jutting out. I made a mental note of that, and yet I actually slipped on this liquid, and I should mention this, much as it's denigrating to me to say this, but I was doing this in bare feet, which wasn't wise. It was a very hot day, so I had shorts and a t-shirt on. But anyway, what happened was that the bottom of my foot, I slid on this material, and it went right into the point of this wood, which was also slathered with this material. So quickly, there was a lot of blood, and I hobbled into the kitchen and washed it off. I didn't look at it, but it was quite painful initially. But then I thought right away again of that, nothing inharmonious can enter being, for life is God. Well, it took it completely out of the frame of reference that I seem to be seeing and experiencing, to realize that being itself couldn't be interrupted by anything, good or bad. It just couldn't be. Because life is God. Life is not little Ethel Baker doing blah, 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 you know, in this particular physical location. God was right there, and God was just as all there as he was for Jesus and for Mary Baker Eddy and for any other situation or need. Well, anyway, then I suddenly remembered I had a wedding to attend the next day, and I was to be in the receiving line, and I had to dress up, and I had to wear heels, and and I had to drive, and I had a stick shift car at the time. Mm. And I still had to finish the porch. So I did quickly finish things on the porch. And honestly, the pain went away very shortly. I frankly quite forgot about it. And anyway, finished up the job, went to the wedding, stood in the receiving line, came and went in my stick shift car. And then maybe a week or so later, a fellow came to do some work for us. And we walked past the porch. And for some reason, I said nothing about putting this material on the porch or anything else about it, but you could see it was recently done. And he said to me, I hope whoever was doing this was not doing it in bare feet, because this is highly toxic material. Mm. That's all he said. I just assured him that everything was taken care of, and we went on with his project, whatever it was. And I never had any difficulty with that. I mean, probably days later, I actually looked at it. I'd forgotten which foot it was, to be honest.
Wow. Such a different frame of reference and starting point from how I think most people would think we'd ordinarily handle a situation like that. I mean, you went to this, to sort of echo the beginning of our conversation, you chose God's perspective. You chose to see things rather than through the what we would call the five senses, which would start with, what does my foot look like? What's in this substance that now got in my foot? How could that affect me? I mean, that's a totally different way of thinking about the world, and it's what brought healing. So what does that say to you about this whole belief of matter and that whole construct?
Well, it isn't at all what it appears to be.
Yeah.
You know, and frankly, by starting with God and our nature being consequences of God's nature, it doesn't upend the world. It rewrites the story and really kind of peels back that which is an overlay and has been assumption based upon assumption based upon assumption for centuries and even millennia. So the thing that's happening is that we are not remaking anything. We are waking up. Christian Science really is a waking up to what actually is. That's a very different experience than trying to mend the body or to make it better or healthier or more comfortable. Mrs. Eddy has a really intriguing answer to the question about, you know, is this world just a big nothing? Do you mind if I just read a little piece of this? Because I think it's so telling. She says here, what mortals hear, see, feel, taste, smell constitutes their present earth and heaven. But we must grow out of even this pleasing thraldom and find wings to reach the glory of supersensible life. Then we shall soar above as the bird in the clear ether of the blue temporal sky. She says also, in our immature sense of spiritual things, let us say of the beauties of the sensuous universe, I love your promise and shall know sometime the spiritual reality and substance of form, light, and color, and of what I now, through you, discern dimly. And knowing this, I shall be satisfied. Mm.
I like that phrase, discern dimly, because, again, I think it gets to that point that it's not like we're just living in a void. That's not what it means for God to be spirit and this universe to be God's spiritual expression. I think that word spiritual can sometimes be confusing for people because there's like an arrow that goes straight to like invisible.
Yeah, and ethereal.
And like ethereal, right. Or distant, you know, it's like mm-hmm. I'll achieve that at some point, but it's not here and now.
Right.
And I think this is especially relevant when it comes to thinking about the body, because I feel like there's a lot of confusion in this area that, okay, if we don't have what we would call a material body, then what, do we just not have a body? Now, again, when you prayed, well, it's hard to even call it praying about your foot because you just kind of immediately rose to that consciousness of what was real. But speaking in shorthand, you know, when you were praying about that situation with your foot, it's not like your foot disappeared.
Right.
As a result, my foot is now spiritual from what I saw. Now I don't have a foot. So let's get into a little bit about when we're talking about body, what are we talking about? What is that spiritual body?
Well, it's the body minus all the negatives, you might say.
Mm.
I mean, I have found it really helpful to go back to Jesus' life and his demonstrations. I mean, when he healed somebody like the 10 lepers, they didn't disappear.
Right.
The leprosy disappeared. If you have a rash on your arm, the solution is not to get rid of your arm. The answer is to get rid of the rash.
Right.
The rash is not useful, helpful, evidence of beauty or anything right. It never will be for anybody, anywhere. It just isn't. It's disease.
Yeah.
From God's point of view, or certainly from Christ Jesus' point of view, it had no place in God's universe for anyone, for any reason. So Mary Baker Eddy talks about, you know, returning the body to its beauty and its usefulness. And she says that the Christian Scientist takes the best care of his body when he leaves it most out of his thought.
Mm.
The human tendency is to focus hugely on the body and hugely on the disease or the problem.
Or sensations or symptoms.
Yeah,
whatever
may be drawing attention to it. I mean, kids in their optimal state, you could say, are pretty good proponents of this or exponents of it because they aren't conscious of their bodies. They are learning to do stuff, walking and speaking and all these things. So it's a servant. It's not a master. Doesn't mean it's a slave. It's a servant. You know, we take care of it, but it's not a focal point. And as I say, in looking at Jesus' body, he was on the move for 3 years. He was with 12 guys for 3 years, camping out. Who knows? You know, they stayed in all different kinds of places. He was in storms, physical maritime storms. You know, there were attempts to kill him, or certainly a lot of negative thought around him in that regard. But also he was surrounded at many occasions by hundreds, if not thousands, of sick people who were looking for help. Your average person would say he should be sick himself just for being around all these people. But quite the opposite. They were being healed.
Mm.
And not just one at a time or a handful of these across 3 years. The Bible says it so simply it's easy to miss. But the word multitude is used a number of times to describe how many people were around him at various times. And they were all healed.
Mm-hmm.
It's very often a single verse in the Bible that says that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing if you stop to think of it. They weren't lining up and, you know, all the people with broken bones over here and everybody with rashes over there.
Right.
Not like that. So what the heck was going on there?
What do you think?
Well, I think Mary Baker Eddy was onto something.
Yeah.
Because she herself not only was healed physically and permanently to a point of robust health. As she was aging, her seemingly best years health-wise should have been, I mean, that would be the assumption, would be when she was young.
Yeah.
But she was ill for a long time as a young person, really up until her, what was considered midlife.
Yeah.
But she lived to be nearly 90 and was still doing things and healing.
I want to make a specific connection for listeners because I think that one pretty intense misconception is that the body is influenced by thought. You know, I say I think medical science has come to this to a certain degree, that mind over matter, people who are more hopeful, more grateful, joyful, tend to recover either better or more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen connections. But Christian Science definitely takes it further than that and basically says body and thought are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And I would say the difference is that the general perception that thought influences experience or influences the body and can make it at least healthier,
mm-hmm,
or more comfortable or so on. The big thing that's left out of that equation is God.
God, yeah.
And until one sees oneself or thinks in the God-connected way that we're not just mortals bumbling around on this planet, you know, doing the best we can and trying to figure stuff out, it helps a lot to start with God.
Mm.
And it's absolutely pivotal because it isn't just that it's mental, it's spiritual.
Mm.
And that has a whole different cascading effect when you start with God as almighty, as 100% good, as love itself, as spirit, and the creator, not a big one,
yeah,
the one and only.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't come from God or couldn't come from God, it literally has no right to exist and actually does not. And that's why it's actually an awakening that goes on in consciousness that gets us to that point more than starting with the body and trying to mend it, even if it's mending it mentally.
Yeah. Tell me about a time when that happened for you.
Well, one time I was in a single car accident in the winter.
Mm.
My car spun out on a 4-lane highway. I mean, 4 lanes on each side. Crashed into the median and spun all the way back.
Oh, whoa.
And, you know, as I was driving, I was by myself. I was driving to see my mom, who was in need. And I had just been praying about the weather because I'd attempted 3 times already to go on this trip and the weather had been so bad and it wasn't great this time. But anyway, I lost control. I just took my hands off the wheel and I just involuntarily kept saying, God is right here. God is right here. Mm. And it was quite amazing because there were no cars that went through at that time, whether I was going across or coming back. But as soon as I got to the side, and the car parked absolutely parallel on the shoulder, and there was 5 cars that went right through.
Whoa.
In very short succession. I'd hit the steering wheel, and I was feeling pain there. I'd hit it hard.
And with your chest.
With my chest,
yeah.
I mean, I had a 10-hour drive in front of me to get to my mom and called a friend and asked if she would be able to help me, a Christian Scientist, and she readily said yes. And I was mainly concerned about the car. I just had no idea what kind of condition it was in. I checked underneath. There was nothing hanging down or anything. But I really just wanted to get to my mom. And
You'd asked this friend to pray for you?
To pray for me.
Okay.
Yeah, and she was helping me, and I still had another 9 hours drive, and so I was praying during that time, too. Not just about me, but, you know, I really wasn't sure about the car, but there really wasn't anywhere I knew I could stop. So I drove for a little while. The car felt stable and sound, and so I just, you know, kept at a reasonable pace, but I did get there. And by then, my chest was feeling quite painful. But there were quite a lot of needs at the house when I got there. There was other family members there that needed attention. And so I stayed in touch with this friend who you know, was praying for me. I mean, one of the simple things that's very common to turn to at times like this is Science and Health says accidents are unknown to God. And we must change the mortal basis of belief and unite with the one mind in order to change the notion of chance to the proper sense of God's unerring direction.
Well, and she even says at the end of it, and thus bring out harmony.
And thus bring out harmony, exactly.
Right, so we know the end result from doing
that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing that strikes me is it's just so categorical, and thus bring out harmony, not like, you have a pretty good chance of bringing out harmony. There's nothing wobbly in there. There's nothing, you know, iffy.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this relative to my family. My dad had recently passed, and there just seemed to be quite a lot of needs in the household. So I was endeavoring to do sort of helpful things during the day, but at night when it was quiet, I just stayed up several nights or parts of several nights just praying in that way and staying in touch with my friend. And the pain went away, largely went away in my chest. And then I had an 8-year-old nephew who was just anxious to wrestle on the floor and do all kinds of stuff like that. So I was able to do those kinds of things as well as run errands and so forth. Anyway, I was there several days and then I headed back home and the weather was clear by then and so forth. But I still felt a kind of discomfort, a real tightness, and it was hampering my mobility in my upper body. And at that point, this friend wasn't available, so I called a Christian Science practitioner. And she immediately got off the phone and prayed for me. I don't know what she prayed, but almost instantly, I felt and I actually heard. I felt a warmth in my chest, in that part of my chest, and I could hear this. It sounds funny to say this, but it was like little crackling sound, almost like it was mending,
oh, wow.
Physically mending. And I was fine after that. I've done tons of lifting and shifting and all kinds of stuff since then. I've never had another problem with it.
What about your car?
Oh, this is maybe not the best thing, but it is an important thing. So I took it to the garage I normally went to by the time I got home. So I had gone 20 miles, 20 hours of driving.
Yeah.
And so I took it to the guy, and he looked it over from stem to stern, and he said, I have no explanation for it. There was hardly anything wrong.
Whoa.
I mean, it was just sort of, you know, slight things that needed adjusting, but nothing wrong with me hitting the guardrails and that kind of thing. And there were things apparently within the, whatever the calibrating of things in the engine, that were thrown off,
okay.
Which he adjusted, but
his point was basically your car shouldn't have been in the condition that it was given what it went through.
No, it wasn't at all a new car,
yeah,
and it wasn't a big car. So other than the slight recalibrating of things in the engine, nothing more needed to be done, and there was no sign of damage on the outside of the car.
So what do you make of that?
Well, I make of it that thought determines experience, and that this divine understanding causes our lives, whatever shape that might take, including things that are appendages to us like cars or houses, to represent this wholeness, this even perfection, and even indestructibility.
Mm-hmm.
Not because one is, you know, particularly toned physically or in any other way to make the body more robust. There was nothing I did to the car to make that happen. But that which is in the realm of our experience is affected by how we're thinking.
Mm. Well, and as you were saying earlier, not just our personal thoughts, but it's this God-based perspective. It's kind of filtering everything through that mm-hmm. lens in a way.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to touch on is just kind of healing writ large. Everybody wants to be a better healer,
mm-hmm.
experience more healing. And I think this whole concept of matter tends to be something that feels like it maybe confuses or thwarts those efforts. It's like the misconceptions that we have about matter or body would seem to kind of stand in the way. What would you say to people in terms of how can we think about this in a way that strengthens us or clarifies things for us as healers?
Well, I think you really want to study the Bible in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. You know, I go back to those all the time because they're positing this radically different foundation, which doesn't mean crazy. It just means down to the root of our beliefs about life and living, about truly everything. It has a different foundation. And it affects our lives deeply. Mm. I mean, consequentially, really continually. Your thought is your experience, whatever shape that takes.
Mm. So more spiritual, more godlike.
Yeah. That's not going to make you airy-fairy.
Right.
It's not going to make you somebody that's going to be sequestered from the world.
Yeah.
It makes us useful in this world. It makes us tremendously helpful in this world. I thought it was interesting, if I can stand back to the side and look at those two experiences I shared, just the fact that I was involved in praying for others or for other needs than my own. I mean, it affected me.
Right.
And I definitely prayed about my individual situations in both of those experiences. But it also was taking me out of self, you know, out of a mortal, material, human sense of me.
Yeah.
And I found that tremendously helpful. Again, I think here's Jesus walking around doing all this work, the spiritual, metaphysical work, and he himself, it's not like he even got a cold. I'm sure we would have learned about it if he did. You know,
right.
I mean, don't get near me, you know, or something like that. It's just amazing. How is that possible?
Well, and he touched a leper.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually made physical contact with something that was considered to be one of the
highly
most contagious diseases out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like he was standing from afar in every case being like,
No. You stay there. I'll pray for you.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. And he commissioned, if you will, these 12 individuals to go forth and do what he had instructed them to do. You know, you have to go sort of fast forward another, 17, 16 centuries before Mary Baker Eddy comes along and is a lover of the Bible, I mean, a student of the Bible, and particularly of his teachings, and desperately in need of health, and just had this combination of needs and issues that were quite remarkable and quite motivating to get her to study those to the point of believing that we, even to this day, are called and have the capacity to at least follow in his wake.
Mm. Make the connection for listeners between praying for others and perhaps being even more effective healers for ourselves. What do you see that connection being?
When thought is on self a lot, and we live in a time that is kind of bifurcated in both urging people to be thinking about bigger needs or other needs of other people and so on. There's lots of people that go into the healthcare professions for just that reason.
Yeah.
And teaching and many other professions. But that focus on self, let alone the body, takes thought away from that which is divine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to disparage the body. It's just to say, this is really where you could say the effects show up most pronouncedly. But it's our thinking. It's our thinking that really is the epicenter of this.
So it's kind of like that focus on the body can turn into almost like a single point of fixation.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're praying for others, you've kind of allowed thought to really expand and, you know, kind of embrace the whole world. And it's almost like from that vantage point that's already filled with this light of God, it's easier to feel clarity when these personal issues come up in a way.
And, you know, the last thing Jesus said when he ascended, or as Mary Baker Eddy says, when the disciples lost sight of him, was to go forth into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. That's a pretty big commission.
Yeah.
You know, why would he say that? Why would that be the last thing he said, unless that was the right thing to do?
Yeah. Unless it was so much bigger than our individual lives.
Yeah.
Fixing our individual problems.
Yeah. I mean, historically, there have been people like Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton and people who were not particularly physically robust or whatever, but they were so selfless in their giving that they did monumental things, you know, just in terms of helping all of these other soldiers or poor people or whatever it was. I think it's just an indicator of what is possible. And ironically, to the human sense, what is health giving to us? Mm. It shows how we're designed, you could say, to do that.
Mm. I love that.
This is for everybody. You don't need to have particular proclivities toward religion or toward healthcare or toward
science.
Yeah. You don't really have to know anything about those things at this point. I would just read Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. That's not an uncommon thing to say on this program, I'm sure, but it is like none other. And I just figure I'm your run of the mill. And if it has helped me in the many ways that it has and changed my life and my trajectory of my life all to the good, it's just destined to do that for anybody who seriously looks into it.
Mm. Thank you, Ethel. We've been so blessed to have you here with us today.
Oh, it's been a total treat. Thank you, Jenny.
I've been speaking with Ethel Baker. She's a Christian Science practitioner and teacher from Buffalo, New York. Thanks for listening to Sentinel Watch. And by the way, we love hearing from you. Feel free to leave us a comment on the Sentinel Watch page for this episode. And this is important. If you have a question that you want answered, please be sure to include your email address so we can get back to you. Sentinel Watch is a production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer. The podcast is produced by Carlos Machado, Sophie Ungerleiter, and our executive producer, Amy Richmond. Our production assistant is Natasha Telshow. Our editor is Lisa Rennie Seitzma. Our audio engineers are Tim Malone, Noel Flatt, Alyssa Britton, and Ian Case. Our theme music is by Jonah Bobo. We'll see you soon.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.